So we, our assignment tonight's Samson. I tried to go on the website and look at how many times we have studied Samson in VBS. I think I got to four or five, and then I just quit counting. And of course, as many of you know, when we do our textual studies through Judges, we will often look at the story of Samson. I think David mentioned this when he was referencing the study of David. You all know this story. You know the story of Samson, and so we will do our best to find first remind ourselves of the story. I know many of you have taught the story of Samson yourselves, but we will do our best to first remind ourselves of the story, and then see what we can pull from the story. I think I've taught this two or three times in this class, so I enjoyed looking at it though again and seeing what else we could draw from the story together. As you know, Samson was an incredibly flawed human being. And we will talk about that this evening. And yet, God used him. God used him. And so I want to spend some time talking about why did God use him. But to do that, to answer that question, I think it's first important that we talk a little bit about the context, a little bit about his strengths, his physical strengths, and then his weaknesses. And then from there, we can explore why did God use someone like Samson. So open up to Judges chapter 13. If you're not there, let me start, and I'm have you help me as we explore the stories of Samson together. If you start in Judges chapter 13, verse 1, it says, "Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them in the hand of the Philistines for 40 years." What's the first word in that verse? Again. What was going on, and I think Dan covered this as well, but what was going on with the Israelites? I'm sorry, I heard words, but I didn't make them out. All right, cycle of sin. What do you mean by cycle of sin? All right, so they were in this. I think it's sometimes referred to as the cycle of the judges. I think Dan referred to it as the clock of the judges. They were in this cycle. They would sin against God. God would take action against them. They were oppressed by some group of people that God allowed them to be delivered to. They cried out to God. They repented. And then who did God send? Judges. And what's a judge? What's it mean? They are a what? A what? Okay, a wise person. What does the word judge mean? What? They are a what? Okay. Messenger. What are they? You had this in your lesson. What's a judge? What's a judge? Deliverer. Okay, and so they were sent. The judges were sent to deliver God's people out of the oppression. So what we find at this point in their history is they're being oppressed. Who are they being oppressed by? Philistines, and Samson is the judge that God has selected to deliver them. And when you read in Judges chapter 13, verse 5, what's it say about Samson? What's he going to do in terms of delivering? He's a Nazirite. What else? No haircuts. Okay. He's a deliverer, and what's he going to, and so he's going to be, what with respect to, okay, he's going to begin the deliverance of the people from the Philistines. Who did you study about on Sunday night? David, right? And who was David faced up against? Philistines, okay? And so this is the beginning of God having the children of Israel being delivered from the Philistines. Let's go to Numbers just briefly, Numbers chapter 6. And if you don't have this, if you make notes in your Bibles, this is a good place to make a note from Judges 13 over to Numbers chapter 6. Numbers chapter 6 talks about what it means to be a Nazarite. And so I'm going to just read a couple verses for you here, starting in verse 2, it says, Numbers chapter 6, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or a woman consecrates as an offering to take the vow of a Nazarite, to separate himself to the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and similar drink. He shall drink neither vinegar made from wine nor vinegar made from similar drink. Neither shall he drink any grape juice nor eat fresh grapes or raisins. All the days of his separation he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine from the seed to the skin. All the days of the vows of his separation, no razor shall come upon his head. Until the days are fulfilled for which he separated himself to the Lord, he shall be holy. Then he shall let the locks of his hair of his head grow. All the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body. He shall not make himself unclean, even for his father or his mother, for his brother or his sister, when they die, because his separation to God is on his head. All the days of his separation, he shall be holy to the Lord." What is the word that you constantly heard in those verses? Separate. Okay? And so if you were, if you took the Nazarite vow, you were, in all your days that you were under the vow, you were separated to God. When, how long was Samson's vow in terms of how long he was going to be a Nazarite? All his life. Who made the vow? Did Samson make it? Who did? His mom. And that's what makes Samson's vow a little bit unique. Okay, I think that's good context. Let's move on to his strengths. So I want to talk for a moment about his physical strength. You know the stories. What do we learn about Samson in terms of his physical strength through the story of him in chapters 14, 15, and 16? Start at the beginning of 14. What's the first time where we really learn about his physical strength? What's he do? All right, he kills a lion. And what's he used to kill that lion? His bare hands. All right, he uses his bare hands to kill the lion. He is in the town of Timnah when he does that. And then what's the next time that we really learn about his strength? What happens? Sorry? He does. We'll get to that in a moment. He carries a gate. After he kills this lion, he leaves, he comes back, and what's in the lion? Honey. What's he do? All right. Yeah, eats the honey from the carcass of the lion. But then he goes on, and there's a party. And there's some people at the party. And what's he decide he's going to do? He's going to give them a riddle. Right? And so he gives them this riddle in verse 14 of chapter 14. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. Is there any way that these individuals can figure out what in the world the answer is to that riddle? Pretty tough. Right? I mean, they weren't there when he killed the lion. They weren't there when he ate the honey. But that's what the riddle's about. Okay? And he makes a wager. What's the wager? If they can figure out this riddle, what's he going to do? What's he going to give them? All right. He's going to give them 30 changes of clothes. Who eventually figures out the answer to the riddle? His wife, All right? So his wife eventually nags him and nags him and nags him. He finally gives in, tells her the answer to the riddle, and she tells these men. Because what did those men threaten to do if she didn't find the answer out to the riddle? What were they going to do to her? They're going to burn her. So she tells them the answer to the riddle. So now he's got to make good on the wager. What's he do? He goes and kills 30 men so that he's got the 30 clothes to give them to settle this debt. Okay? And so that's the second thing we see. All right, let's keep going. Chapter 15. He heads back. He decides he's going to go back and try to be with his wife. He learns that she's been given to his friend. So he's a little upset by that. What's he do? Grabs 300 foxes, ties their tails together, puts a torch in there, and sends them out to punish the Philistines. And what do they burn up? They burn up their grains, their vineyards, their olive gardens, burns them all up. He somehow, I don't know how, captures 300 foxes and ties their tails together. All right. What do they do in response to him burning up all their crops? What do the Philistines do? Who do they punish? Punishes wife, father-in-law, right, and burn them. And so what's he do in response to that? Chapter 15, verse 8, what's he do? How's it describe what it is he does? It's a great slaughter. He kills these Philistines, takes out revenge. Okay, so then he runs off and he hides. Runs off and hides, and the Philistines go to the men of Judah and say, "You need to go get them." How many men do they send to go try to capture Samson? 3,000. Okay, and he allows himself to be bound with new ropes, and they hand him over to the Philistines. And what's he do? Breaks the rope and does what? He kills 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. All right? All right, now we get to, he's in the city of Gaza. They're laying in wait, the Philistines, and he takes the door off the hinges. And he carries that door up to face the city of Hebron, and how far is that? Does anyone know? Close. It's about 35, 40 miles away, carrying the gates, the doors from the gates of that city. All right. What's the, any other examples of his strength that you can think of? You're missing like the big one. Yeah, if they cut off his hair, he loses strength. Was it the hair that was important? Yeah. What was it?
It was
the vow he had made to God. All right. So, what's the story with Delilah? What happens there? What's she trying to do? Figure out the source of his strength, right? And so they try to bind him up a couple times. What do they use? All the wrong answers. So he tells them, use 7 clean bowstrings. And so they use that. That doesn't work. He tells them to use new ropes. That doesn't work. Right? He breaks free of all that. But ultimately, they capture him because he tells her where the source of his strength is. And when they have their party to celebrate capturing him, what's he do? Right at the end of his life. Pushes those those pillars down that hold up that temple, right? So those are examples of his great physical strength. I mentioned it at the beginning, and some of you snickered. He was, despite the great physical strength that he had, and those are sometimes the stories we hear, how was he as a, in terms of his character, and how was he as a human being? Not very good. A little flawed. So let's just talk a little bit about his weaknesses. What are some of his problems? What are some of his challenges? Women. All right. Oh yeah, he had some problems with some women. Which women in particular? All of them. Yeah. All of them. All right. Who's the first? Who's the first one that we're told of that he has a problem with? Before Delilah, who was the first one? His wife, okay. So the woman in Timnah. What's his parents say, by the way, when he says, she looks good to me, she pleases me, I want her? What are they, what's their response? Can you just not find someone who's in your people, right? But that's who he wants, that's who pleases him. Skip this for now. I'll come back to it in a second. All right. Well, who's the second one? He has trouble with harlot in Gaza, and then third is Delilah. He not just has an issue with these women. What was the rule? What was God's rule? God's command to his people at this time? What was the expectation? I'm sorry? Yeah. He violated God's covenant, the commandment that he had. God explicitly told them, do not go out and marry individuals from other nations. And so it wasn't just that he had a woman issue. He had violated what God had commanded him to. Kind of related to that, he committed fornication. What else? What else was a sign of the weakness of him? What else do we see? He's arrogant. All right. What do you mean by that? Okay. Knew what his strength was. And so what did he do because he knew where that strength was? Sorry? What did he constantly seem to do? What kind of position did he put himself in? He was around trouble all the time, right? And so he constantly is inviting temptation into his life, and you see that throughout the story. And some of it was perhaps the arrogance he felt for what he was accomplishing. What, anything else? What? He lied? Yeah. What about his vow? He broke it, right? He ultimately broke the Nazirite vow. Okay. So, this, you know, at least when I remember growing up, I don't remember this part of the story. I remember getting told all the strong things that he did, but this certainly demonstrates how flawed he was as a human. And yet, what did God do? God used him, right? And so, when you look at how he was used by God, I mean, how many Philistines did he kill? Right? I mean, we know he killed 1,000 with the jawbone. We know it was 3,000 people in the temple. It said he killed more in that moment than he had in his entire life. He killed a lot of Philistines. What do you do with their crops? Set them all on fire, destroyed them. Okay. He's constantly avoiding capture, right? They are trying to lay in wait. They're trying to find ways to capture him. When they eventually capture him and they have their party and they worship Dagon, their god, how do they refer to Samson? Anyone know what they say, how they describe him? Who is he? He's their what? Their enemy, right? And so he has created so much havoc for the Philistines that they're motivated to pay off whoever they need to pay off to capture him, right? And how much do these lords offer Delilah for Samson? Anyone remember? They each were willing to throw in how much pieces of silver? How many pieces of silver? 1,100 pieces of silver each. How much did it cost to get Judas to betray Jesus? 30. Right? I mean, they really wanted Samson. And, you know, God allows him to ultimately have revenge on the Philistines. So God uses him. What's interesting about this story about Samson, we spoke a moment ago about the fact that he wanted this woman, this Philistine woman from Timnah. Go look at it for a second in chapter 14, verse 4. So he says he wants to marry this woman. His parents are trying to convince him, let's not marry her. Why don't you try to find someone from your own brethren to marry? He says, but she pleases me well. And then what's it tell us in verse 4? His mom and dad did not know that he was what? What was he looking to do? All right, it says he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. I think if you look at the ESV or the NIV, it'll talk about he was looking for an opportunity to confront the Philistines. What was his ultimate job? What had he signed up for in the womb? Deliver them. What's this verse tell us about Samson's motivation for marrying this woman? What was he looking to do? Move against the Philistines. I want you to think a moment about the story of the lion that we talked about. He kills the lion with his bare hands. It's got honey in the carcass. He comes back and eats the honey. And all of that allows him to come up with what? That he uses later. The riddle. Okay. So he comes up with this riddle. And he... his wife tells the answer. And as a result of his wife telling the answer, he has to pay on the debt. He has to make good on the debt. Who's he go kill to get 30 pieces of clothing? Who's he kill? Philistines. What's his job? Deliver Judah from Philistines. It's interesting when you realize how these things were connected to what his ultimate job was. So God decides to use him. Why is God using him? He's flawed, but why is God using him? What? He's a Nazarite. Okay. He's what? He's capable. Okay.
That was his purpose to
That was his purpose. He had accepted in his role to be a deliverer for God's people. Right? And he was looking for opportunities to act on his job. So despite his flaws, God was with them, because Samson ultimately had not just physical strength, but he had some spiritual strength despite these flaws, and he trusted God, and he was doing what God had asked him to do. And so he accepts his role as a deliverer of God's people. How was he in terms of compliance with the Nazarite vow? What? He does a pretty good job honoring this Nazarite vow. We looked at what the restrictions were in number 6. But despite his flaws, he tried to honor that vow his entire life. Right? And so he had been charged with the responsibility of delivering the Israelites. He had mostly complied with his vow. He realized God was with him. So go and look for a second. There's a phrase that you see in almost all these stories, these different times in his life. And the phrase is, "The Spirit of the Lord came upon him." And so when we look at Judges chapter 13, verse 25, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord had been moved upon him." In chapter 14, right before he kills the lion, what's it say in verse 6 of chapter 14? "Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he tore the lion apart. When it's time for him to make good on the debt, in verse 19, what's it say? "Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he kills the 30 men." When he is bound with the new ropes by the men from Judah, and they hand him over to the Philistines, and he breaks it before he kills 1,000 of them with the jawbone of a donkey, what's it say? In verse 14, "The Spirit of the Lord came upon him." Samson realized that God was with him. In fact, when his hair is cut, and he doesn't necessarily realize his hair is cut, what's his reaction when the Philistines come in to try to capture him? He says, "I'm just going to go out, and this is going to be like every other time." And he didn't realize who wasn't with him anymore. The Lord. But all these other instances, because he accepted the role of being the deliverer, because he, you know, mostly complied with the Nazarite vow, God was with him, and he realized that. He also relied on God. And so after he kills the 1,000 men, what's it say in the end of chapter 15? He was thirsty, and who's he turned to? Who's he turned to? God. And who delivers and helps him? Gives him water. We see in his life that he prayed to God. I mean, he prayed to God at this moment. He obviously prays to God as well. And prays to God as well after he's been captured. And so the reason, at least I think the reason that God is using him is because of these things. He realizes, accepts the role as the deliverer. he is mostly compliant with the Nazirite vow. He's realized God is with him. He's relying on God. He's praying to God. And why do you think he turned to God? Why do you think he had this kind of spiritual strength?
Because God had saved him before.
Okay, God had saved him before. What in his background would suggest to us that he knew it was important to trust God? He knew it was important to rely on God. Okay, his parents told him the story. Go to chapter 13. Who is Samson born to? What do we know about Samson's mom?
She's barren.
Okay. And when the angel of the Lord comes and tells her, you're going to have a son, and he's going to deliver the people out of the hands of the Philistines, who they've been oppressed by for 40 years, what's her reaction to that? So it's unique to have a Nazirite from birth. What did his mom do when after the angel of the Lord came to her? Who did she go talk to? Her husband. And what was his reaction? He was like, we need to go pray about this. So he goes and prays about it, and who comes back? The angel of the Lord. And what do they want to understand? What do they ask? Right? He wants to understand. Manoah wants to understand what this angel of the Lord had said to his wife. And so we see some things, we learn some things from these verses. What do we learn about the relationship that Manoah and his wife had? Who did they trust? Who did they rely on? Who did they turn to in prayer? And what was their reaction when he said, I want to go marry this Philistine woman? Don't like it. Why do you think they didn't like it? I mean, who knows? There could have been a lot of reasons, but what was the most important reason that they were bothered by it? What was the commandment? What had they been commanded to do? And so, what can we assume? Right? What conclusion can we draw out of this one chapter, or chapter and a couple verses in 14 about his parents? They're godly. And what do you think they had taught their son when he was growing up? Who to rely on? The importance of prayer. And so, again, flawed individual, but what do we see throughout his life when he's delivering the people of Israel out of the oppression of the Philistines? Who's he relying on? Who's he turning to? And in his last moments, right, when he violates the vow and he tells Delilah where the source of his strength is, what do they do? What do the Philistines do? They capture him and they do what? Cut his ear out, pull his eye out. Where do they send him? Where do they send Samson? He's a what? Where they send him? He's in prison, but what's he doing? Grinder. And so they now have the party to worship Dagon for delivering their enemy to them. And he's brought out. And by the way, while he's in the prison grinding, what's happening to his head? Hair is growing back. I don't know about you, but If I was Philistines, I think I'd be a little bit smarter than that. Maybe I might have a barber around. Might have a barber around while he was working. But they didn't, apparently. But it wasn't the hair. What was it? What did he do when he was in that temple? He prayed to God. What's his prayer, by the way? How genuine does his prayer sound? All right. There you go, right? He's still flawed. He like almost gets it right. So in chapter 16, verse 28, O Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray. Just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines. That all sounds great. For my two eyes. Can't help himself. Still flawed. But who did he turn to in that moment? God. And so what's God allow him to do? Fulfill his purpose. And so I certainly think that one of the reasons that Samson trusted God is because he was taught at an early age the importance of trusting God. Okay, we're almost out of time. What's our takeaway from this? No, he didn't get to live. What's our takeaway from this? It's an interesting story. How does it apply to us? What do we learn from this? Okay. John? Yeah, so for those of you who couldn't hear, John's comment was, you know, he seemed to have seemed to rely on himself a lot in his life. Didn't seem to turn to God until, the moment he had nothing else. He had no more strength. He had violated the vow, and he was turning to God at that moment in weakness. I guess a couple reactions to that. One is, what do we learn about God and his willingness to have you turn to him in all those moments? He'll forgive you. Right. Sure. Yeah. Sometimes when we study some of these individuals, it's interesting. You can go look at Jesus' lineage, and not everyone in that lineage is a good, necessarily a great person or someone you would think might have been in God have chosen to put them in Jesus' lineage, but they are there. And so ultimately, Samson had a role to play, and he played it, and didn't mean he was perfect, didn't mean he was great. But in the moment that he realized he needed to turn to God, he did turn to God, and God responded. What else? Yep. Yep. Ultimately, God allowed him to take vengeance on the Philistines. But I think the point Tracy made is still an important one. That was his job. That was what he was asked to do, what he had been kind of born to do, was to deliver, to begin the deliverance of the people from the Philistines. And so despite the flaws, that when you go through the stories, that's what he was doing. Yes, sir. And I'm glad you mentioned, I'm sorry I failed to forget it. I mean, when you go in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32, Samson's reference. And so I think there are things we can see through here in terms of the Spirit of God constantly coming upon him, the fact that he's referenced in Hebrews chapter 11, that tell us, despite the flaws, he was doing his best to be faithful to that Nazarite vow and to what God wanted him to do. I have one announcement as we close. Thank you for all your participation and comments. We need a little bit of help taking down the decorations. It takes 3 or 4 weeks for them to go up and one night for them to come down. But if it's laminated, if you're going to help us, if it's laminated, we need to keep it. If it's not laminated, we can trash it. So if we can get your help with that, we'd appreciate it. Thank you for all your comments and participation. Hopefully you found this helpful.